Subcommittee. Rick?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, you have before you today the budget bill for the Board of Pharmacy. The Board of Pharmacy is responsible for licensing and regulating pharmacists, pharmacy technicians, pharmacies, drug manufacturers, wholesalers, drug outlets, and other distributors of legal drugs. The governor's recommended budget is a 34.4% increase over the 99.01 estimated expenditure levels and a 35.1% increase over the current service level. As with the other health-related licensing boards, the Board of Pharmacy is 100% other funds from licenses and application fees, renewals, civil penalties, and miscellaneous fees. The governor's recommended budget does assume a fee increase during the next biennium. There is a bill, Senate Bill 405, that increases some of the statutory limitations for fees set by the Board of Pharmacy. In addition to that bill, the board will be increasing fees through administrative rule. Those that are increased through administrative rule during the 01-03 biennium will come back to the 03 Legislative Assembly ratification. The fee increase is needed to restore current service level. There are 5 policy option packages. The first one does restore current service level. The second one is a computer system upgrade, substantially replacing their entire system that they have now. The Department of Administrative Services Information Resources Management Division is currently doing a study to determine what level of systems that they need. We do have representatives from DAS IRMD here with us today to address those issues if you would like. Another policy package adds 2 positions to the board staff. These are both administrative positions. Another package is with regards to their pharmacist recovery program and changes the limited duration position for that program to permanent status. And then finally, their last policy option package increases the funding for travel expenses both in-state and out-of-state. And we have with us today Joseph Schnabel, who is the president of the board, Gary Schnabel, who is the executive director, and then Colleen Kennedy from the Department of Administrative Services.
Thank you, Rick.
Yes. Rick, are we supposed to have the memo that you read from?
Yes.
I don't seem to find it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Trump,
I
deliver these to your offices either the afternoon before or the morning of.
Okay, so I should have brought it.
I do have extra copies, though. No. I always bring extra copies if there's some that need them.
Nobody else in my predicament.
Well, I think I forgot mine, too. Thank you.
Okay.
Usually they put it on my desk. I didn't see it.
Mr. Joseph, would you like to proceed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Joe Schnabel. I'm current president of the Board of Pharmacy. I'm also assistant director of pharmacy at Salem Hospital and had a nice walk down here this morning. The Oregon Board of Pharmacy was established by the Oregon Legislature in 1891. But in the interest of time, I'll bring us up to the present time. I think you have a picture of the first Board of Pharmacy in your packet. So most of them are no longer with us, but we still carry on despite that. The mission of the Oregon Board of Pharmacy is to promote, preserve, and protect the public health, safety, and welfare by regulating the practice of pharmacy and the quality and distribution of drugs and medical devices. There are 7 members of the Oregon Board of Pharmacy. There are 5 pharmacist members and 2 members from the public. 2 of the pharmacist members have joined us today. Alan Dulwick from Kaiser Permanente is there, and then Mike Patrick from Safeway in Redmond is also with us, and then Carolyn Gibson, the administrative programs manager from the board, has also joined us. Other board members include Lynn Talton and Marie Williams. Those are our public members. And the other pharmacist members are Mark Watt from Fred Meyer and Blake Rice from Riddle Pharmacy in Riddle. Responsibilities of the board have been outlined, but they include licensing of pharmacists and pharmacist interns, registration of technicians, registration of drug outlets, including in-state pharmacies, out-of-state mail-order pharmacies, and even internet pharmacies. We also register student health center pharmacies, student health centers that dispense drugs, correctional facilities, county health clinics, family planning clinics, non-prescription drug outlets, wholesalers and manufacturers. The board enforces state and federal laws regulating the practice of pharmacy. It provides routine inspections of pharmacies and interacts with the licensees in those pharmacies. It runs the diversion program for pharmacists called the Pharmacist Recovery Network. It coordinates with state and federal agencies on enforcement of drug laws and professional disciplinary issues. We have a strategic plan that we develop each year, and I think you have a copy of that in your booklet. Our main strategic plans include medication safety. The Board of Pharmacy adopted an accuracy label rule. We were the first board in the country to adopt such a rule, and that provides for a description of the tablet or capsule inside of the bottle to help reduce medication error. And we believe that program has been very successful already, even though we're still phasing that in. And in July of this year, we will have a complete implementation statewide. We're looking at error reporting and self-monitoring systems for medication errors. We participate in the USP Medication Error Reporting System, which is a national reporting system for medication errors. This is an active area of discussion throughout pharmacy and medicine and nursing. You're probably familiar with the Institute of Medicine report on medical error. We work with other health licensing boards on those issues. Another strategic goal is to define the role of pharmacy personnel, including the pharmacists and the technicians and then the clerks that work in the pharmacies. Education, both of the public through a brochure, and I think we brought some copies of the pharmacy, our board brochure. Is that in the packet?
In the packet.
Okay. We developed that brochure to help patients understand what it is they can expect from their pharmacist and also to help keep track of their medication regimens. Education of professionals, including improving the CE requirements and our challenge exam that we offer each year in cooperation with the College of Pharmacy. And also the on-site education assessment of pharmacy technicians. We're actually looking to help improve those issues. Technology, we're trying to remove impediments to the utilization of appropriate technology within pharmacies. Interfacing with the Board of Medical Examiners to evaluate electronic prescribing. And our goal is to move toward a paperless rules system. Many of our rules require paper record keeping. And as we know, most records can be kept in many other ways, primarily electronically. And so we're trying to redevelop rules such that the paper record is no longer the only way that records can be kept. In the area of drug diversion, we used to have a drug alert system which helped to alert prescribers and pharmacies in different areas of the state to people who were trying to write false prescriptions to obtain drugs. We had to shut that program down because of budget shortfalls in the last biennium, but we would like to reestablish that program. We did get a lot of negative input when we did stop doing that system, and so we would like to reestablish that to help prevent drug diversion. We also work with the DEA and local law enforcement agencies to reduce both internal drug diversion from pharmacists and pharmacy staff, as well as external diversion through break-ins and false prescriptions. The board functions. Internally, we would like to improve service to licensees and the public. The board still answers the telephone with a human being. We're somewhat proud of that because you can get right to the person that you would like to talk to when you call the board office. We don't have a telephone tree system where you have to punch 10 numbers before you can find a human being. And we feel that's very important in interfacing with both the public and with our licensees. We still have a very rapid turnaround of license renewals, even though our license renewal computer system is an old DOS-based system, which is really no longer supported and is hopefully going to be replaced in the near future. prioritization of board business in spite of limited resources and the unlimited breadth and scope of the problems that seem to come to the board, systematic review of the rules to eliminate unnecessary rules and to modify our rules processes toward outcomes based rules rather than stepwise process-based rules. We've established standing committees to address the priorities of the board, both the procedures of the board staff, rules that need to be developed for the practice, and the compliance section. So those are the three standing committees that have been developed to address those issues. Communication with licensees and stakeholders through our newsletter, local and regional pharmacy meetings, and outreach to our licensees and other stakeholders. Interaction with other state boards of pharmacy, reciprocity from pharmacists moving in and into and out of Oregon, to monitor trends in regulation, monitor national issues, and forecasting of those major issues that are likely to come to us, so that we have an idea of what we'll be dealing with in the future. And then strategic planning so that we can focus our resources to carry out our mission. Some of the current issues that are facing the Board of Pharmacy, and this is a very abbreviated list, but as I mentioned, medication safety. The pharmacist shortage, there's currently an estimated 7,000 empty pharmacist jobs in the country. The Western United States is actually in a worse condition as far as the pharmacist shortage goes. We have many openings for pharmacists. In fact, just at Salem Hospital, we've got six pharmacist positions that we've been unable to fill for over a year. So, unfortunately, we're having to deal with that issue and the impact that has on patient care. The College of Pharmacy has just changed from a bachelor's degree program to an all doctor of pharmacy degree program. That will leave a one-year gap in graduates in the year 2002. So this year will be the last graduating class of bachelor's degree students. 2002, there will be no graduates, and then in 2003 will be the first Doctor of Pharmacy class coming out, and that will be a smaller class than the previous bachelor's degree classes. The increasing role of drug therapy in patient care and the information needs of consumers, direct consumer advertising has reached $1.3 billion and rising. I think we've all seen the effect of that. Technician discipline. The Board of Pharmacy currently does not have the authority to discipline pharmacy technicians who violate Oregon drug laws, but this legislature can remedy that by passing Senate Bill 540. We'll plug there. And our most current issue is to secure funds for the 2001-2003 biennium to allow us to carry out this mission. As you know all too well, there are always more issues that come before you than you can realistically address. The same is true in pharmacy and healthcare. The challenge is to see them coming, assess each one, and formulate an action plan consistent with your mission. The Oregon Board of Pharmacy keeps itself focused on its mission to protect public health, safety, and welfare. This does not always come easily given the economic realities in healthcare today. I believe that this board is doing extraordinarily good job given the limited resources available. The budget request before you will allow us to continue to protect the citizens of Oregon and facilitate safe and effective pharmaceutical care. Thank you for your attention.
And if you'd like to proceed, please identify yourself. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Gary Schnabel. I'm Executive Director of the Board of Pharmacy, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here today and present our budget proposal. Although in all honesty and all due respect, I'd rather be fishing today. I'm excited to be here because a lot of work has gone into this, and it's sort of like game day. We've been practicing and preparing a lot, and so we finally now get to sit here and talk about it. Joe mentioned the other board members by name, and five pharmacists and two public members spent a lot of time working with me. And we all spent a lot of time working with Colleen from Budget and Management, and finally, when we got to that point, working with Rick Olson and LFO. And I hope that you will experience and appreciate that the documents you have there are not just my interpretation of what I think we want to do, but it's really work by a group of people with approximately 100 years of pharmacy experience, and it's presented to you after hundreds of hours of putting it together with full knowledge that we're asking for an increase that's not really palatable for everybody, but it's not simply an attempt to take our old programs and expand them. We feel like after this assessment that we put in to this, that there really isn't a choice, that we have to rebuild our systems, and we're not just taking the old systems and expanding them. We're going to do some serious rebuilding and inventing some new programs to get us where we need to go. We think that the regulatory services that are required by statute and that are currently demanded by our stakeholders are not being met very well and have not been for the last 5 or 6 years by this agency. And hopefully in this presentation we'll be able to make that point to you all and arrive at that. What you have in the packet should be two documents besides your three-ring binder. That is the budget presentation. The two that I handed out today are one with the title Board of Pharmacy. This is the presentation that follows the format that we've all agreed to that came from Budget and Management. That's stepwise going through that. And the other is an appendix that are some documents or supporting documentation that goes along with the presentation. And I'm prepared to go through this in order, or I'm prepared to sit and answer questions that you might have, you know, at the discretion of the chair and at your direction.
Why don't we hear from Colleen, and then we'll get back to questions that you want to see.
Okay.
Colleen, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee. My name is Colleen Kinney, Budget and Management, Department of Administrative Services, and I'll be referring to this handout here. This is a presentation of the governor's recommended budget for the Board of Pharmacy. Page 2 shows that the 2001-03 governor's recommended budget is $2,848,183 other funds, which is a 28.9% increase over the 1999-01 legislatively approved budget and a 35% increase above the current service level budget. Positions increased from 13 to 15.5 full-time equivalent. Page 3 shows that the board is funded entirely with other funds from business licenses and fees. Page 4 reiterates what Rick Olson was saying. The governor's recommended budget is a 28.9% increase from the 1999-2001 legislatively approved budget. The recommended budget continues current programs and services. It upgrades an aging computer system, establishes new permanent assistant administrator and office support to oversee agency policy and research. This is 2.0 full-time equivalent. It also establishes permanent part-time diversion program position and increases travel expenses. Page 5 shows that the budget supports one program unit. The program's purpose is to protect the public by regulating the practice of pharmacy in regulating the quality and distribution of prescription drugs, over-the-counter drugs, and controlled substances. Page 6 shows the split between personal services and services and supplies. The former is about 67% of the agency's budget, and services and supplies comprise about 33%. Page 7 shows how we developed the governor's recommended budget. First, we included statewide salary adjustment. This was included before the April e-board. And then we made adjustments to current service level in terms of position and standard inflationary changes, eliminated one-time expenditures for evaluating the licensing system during the current biennium. Also, we made adjustments for the standard state government service charges and reduced expenditures based on projected revenues. The first policy package is 231, which would restore the current service level and includes a fee increase. Some of the fees are contingent on passage of Senate Bill 405. Page 8 shows the other policy packages for the recommended budget. 232. The recommended budget provides expenditure limitation for upgrading the board's computer system. The board has an outdated and unreliable licensing program. During the 1999 session, the legislature approved $25,000 other funds to review the current licensing process, evaluate current license application software and document workflow, and recommended steps to streamline the process and identify requirements for moving to the Internet. This $25,000 was phased out for 0103, and a DAS Information Resource Management Division evaluation is currently underway. Also, someone from DAS IRMD is here to answer specific questions about this package. Policy Package 233, recommended budget creates two new permanent full-time positions, an assistant administrator and office support person to manage personnel issues, budget development, and communicate with the media and stakeholders. Package 234, the recommended budget provides establishing a permanent part-time executive service non-supervisory position for the board's diversion program, which is known as the Pharmacist Recovery Program, PRN. This program rehabilitates pharmacists addicted to drugs or alcohol and ultimately helps protect the public. The board can refer a licensee to the program as part of a disciplinary matter, but more importantly, pharmacists can self-refer. The board had volunteers running the program until recently. The board received $74,000 other funds expenditure limitation during the 99 session to contract with an individual to run the program and preserve its confidential nature. Because statutorily the PRN administrator must be a board employee, the board requested that the Department of Administrative Services establish a limited duration part-time position during the current biennium. This was approved, and the board hired an individual in the fall of 2000. The recommended budget allows shifting $74,000 in professional services to personal services to cover for the cost for the permanent part-time position. It also includes some service and supplies associated with that position and $900 for per diem. Package 235 includes expenditure limitation for out-of-state travel for training and education and in-state travel for inspections of pharmacies and other drug outlets throughout the state. The board also conducts educational programs to various stakeholder groups throughout the state. Finally, on page 9, it shows that even though annual renewals are estimated to increase gradually, program and overhead costs continue to rise and cash reserves have been tapped. Expenditures were reduced by about 200,000 other funds, so the board may meet current service level if the fee increase proposal and Senate Bill 405 are not approved. Also, there was a technical adjustment, like the other health-related licensing boards, to correct an error in allocating the risk management charges. This is 1866, bringing the 0103 governor's revised budget to $2,850,049 other funds. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer.
Fine, thank you. What I'd like to do, since this is a substantial percentage increase over the last budget, Gary, if you would address your the policy packages, or justify them, I guess is what I would say. I'll tell you, before we do that, this is a public hearing. We have one person signed up to testify, and we'll hear from that person, then get back to you. So, Tom Holt, please. Welcome to the committee, Tom.
Thank you.
Identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, my name is Tom Holt. I'm Executive Director of the Oregon State Pharmacists Association. Our members include the licensed pharmacists throughout the state, as well as approximately 240 independent pharmacy owners and some pharmacy technicians. I'll be very brief. We support the Board of Pharmacy's request, actually with some enthusiasm, even realizing that it means some fairly substantial increases in fees to our members. We've had extensive discussions about this and why this is needed amongst our legislative committee and amongst our members. And the consensus is that this is badly needed. As was mentioned in the earlier testimony, the board's computer system is badly out of date. They're still operating on DOS in some of their systems. And when we make requests as a profession for information from the board, as we're trying to find out things, you know, like how can we better project needs for staff and so on. The board simply isn't even able to respond easily to what for most of us would be routine requests of operating on Windows-based systems if they can't point and click and pull it out. We also see a need as things are changing with more electronic record keeping and so on, electronic prescribing systems and greater complexity in the practice of pharmacy, for the board to have another administrative person to deal with the more complex rules issues that are coming before the board. And we very much agree that the board should have that type of position. Other health boards, such as the Board of Medical Examiners and the Board of Nursing, have similar persons in those types of roles. So we very much support this. We understand it. It does mean some increased costs to our members and to the profession generally. I would point out, as I'm sure Gary will later on, that it's been some years since the board has had an increase in fees. They've been very prudent about asking for increases. I believe it's been 10 or 11 years since there's been any increase in the pharmacist fees anyway. And I believe the others are in much the same condition. So we're comfortable in seeing an increase now because we haven't seen a pattern of just coming every session to the legislature asking for a little bit more and a little bit more. They really have held off as long as it seems prudent. But at this point, we've reached a need from an industry perspective and a professional perspective that in order to better serve all the stakeholders that come before the board and the public, the board needs these increases. Thank you very much. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Holt? Yes, Representative Close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tom, forgive me if I've missed this, but Senate Bill 405, what cap in the fees are in that bill?
Chairman Hartung, Representative Close, off the top of my head, I don't know what the dollar amount is in Senate Bill 405. It concerns two of the fee increases, I believe, of the numerous licenses. Perhaps Gary could answer that question better than I could.
Gary, do you have that information?
Thank you. Yeah, the Senate Bill 405 would propose to increase the statutory maximum fee for pharmacies and for manufacturing and wholesale drug outlets. Currently, manufacturers and wholesalers' drug outlet registration fee is $225. We would propose that increases to $400. I'm looking on page 107 of the binder, and those fees are detailed there on page 107.
And for the pharmacies?
For the pharmacies, we propose from 100 to 175.
Thank you.
There is also, let me find the page number, a history of our fee increases back to 1967. And I think that's in our agency summary. No, it's in revenues. I'm sorry, it's in revenues.
While you're looking there, Rick has the bill.
Oh, good. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Close, in Senate Bill 405, for registration of drug outlets other than pharmacies, the current statutory limit is $300, and the proposed limit increase is to $500 maximum. Initial pharmacy or institutional drug outlet, current fee is not to exceed $100. The Senate Bill 405 is to increase that not to exceed $300. And then pharmacy or institutional drug outlet delinquent renewal fees not to exceed currently is $75. That would increase to $200 in Senate Bill 405.
Thank you.
Other questions for Mr. Holt?
No, I don't have Mr. Holt.
Okay. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
May be excused. I see you have another appointment. Okay, Gary, do you want to explain?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe I could add a little bit more explanation to the previous question, too. I want to make sure that there are two different numbers. There's the number in Senate Bill 405 that increases the statutory maximum, and then there's the number in our current budget proposal that would propose the actual increased fee that is somewhere below the statutory maximum. I found it as page 106 that describes the history of fee increases since 1967.
That's in the appendix?
I'm sorry, no, this is in the budget binder, the actual budget document.
Revenue on 106?
Page 106 under revenue.
Okay.
That shows the affected positions and what their fees were in 1967, and then each increase from that point to our proposed 01.
Okay, members have any question about that?
Just a clarification.
Certainly, Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So your last increase was 1990, or one in 96?
Sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, yes, 1990 was the last increase. The technician fee was established in 1996. We didn't have a fee for technicians prior to 1996. It was established at $25, and the statutory maximum is $50.
Follow-up question on the fees. I noted that you have a staggered renewal system, and that your current ending balance is about 3.5 months. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, that's my understanding. It's been 12 months until last session, and everyone was kind of readjusted ending balances, so we went to about 3.5 months last session, and that's where we're supposed to be this time.
Where would it put your ending balance if you with the fee increases?
With the fee increases?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, with the fee increases, including our policy option packages, it will keep us at the same. It will keep us at a 3 to 3.5 month ending balance.
Do you have something to add, Rick, to that?
No, Mr. Chair. According to my calculations, the governor's recommended budget would end up at 3.5 months worth of ending balance.
That's including the income.
Are you then, Representative?
Well, I'll let Ms. Senator Troll, because I have another question on another issue.
Okay, we'll get back to you, Senator Troll.
I'm just wondering, with your fee increases, how will you compare to other states in terms of what they charge you?
Mr. Chair, Senator Troll, thank you. I failed to copy the document that I have, but we had one of our inspectors round up fees from Washington, Alaska, Idaho, Montana, Hawaii, Nevada. We are right in the middle, and if you need those figures, I can have them. We're scheduled for tomorrow. I can bring them tomorrow. I just wasn't able to get that. But we are basically right in the middle.
New fees are not out of line, though.
Not in our estimation.
What do the numbers say?
Well, Mr. Chair, that's what the numbers say, and I'll bring them tomorrow if you want to see them. There's a high end of $1,000 for wholesalers and manufacturers. I believe that's Nevada, and we're proposing a 400.
Okay, that'd be fine. Yes, Senator.
I have a question of Rick. The request for $207,000 for the computer issue. Will the e-government committee look at this before? On this particular request, most of the requests that are substantial dollars to go into computer issues, that committee is looking at them before we make a decision?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, yes, the government committee would have the decision of this subcommittee. We'll have them review that before. And that certainly would be a reasonable thing to do.
Mr. Chair, I have a question.
You done, Representative?
Beg your pardon.
Yes, I just wanted to make certain that we were consistent because all other boards and commissions and agencies that come before us where they have a substantial amount of dollars for computer kinds of activities, we're requiring that they go through e-government.
And Mr. Chair, if I might, one of the options would be to approve this package
And then schedule it.
And then schedule it pending approval by the e-government, or advancing e-government committee.
Yes, Representative Smith.
I have a question regarding package 235. Is that all right now?
Now is the time, yes.
Okay.
We'll give Rick, or we'll give Gary the first look at it.
You have the in and out of state travel, $31,000. How much of that is out of state travel?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, on page 113, again, the budget binder, the three-ring binder, I'm in program units, page 113.
Oh, thank you.
Broken down to $21,000 for in-state and $10,000 for out-of-state. And if I might continue with the question, the in-state travel includes, as was mentioned earlier, pharmacy board staff doing on-site inspections at the pharmacies and hospitals around the state, doing educational programs, both board members and staff around the state, and it's travel for board members who live in various parts of the state to come for the board meetings.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Certainly.
Regarding your out-of-state travel, what's that for? How many go? What's your length of stay?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, yeah, I can't do it exactly, but in part of the explanation written in here, I do list the organizations that we try to network with and that we're asked to coordinate with. Primarily, they include the National Association of Boards of Pharmacy that includes boards of pharmacy directors and members from all around the country and Canada and New Zealand and Australia. They have an annual meeting and a mid-year meeting and a district meeting. Our district is the Northwest, and we combine with the next district, which is Southwest California, Nevada, Arizona, New Mexico. And so rather than having separate meetings for each one of those, we combine them. And so that's three meetings with just the Boards of Pharmacy Association. Then we are also asked to coordinate with the federal agencies like the FDA and the DEA with one or two separate meetings a year to be brought up to date with them. The list on page 113 and 114 is a little more inclusive. We don't make it to all those meetings. Again, it's really subject to our budget, but with all of those groups, we would try to have a staff or a board member, sometimes both, be able to attend those.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Certainly.
How much of this out-of-state travel could you use conference calls, internet communication, and so forth with?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, the option for a conference call for the particular meetings that I mentioned probably is not our choice to make. I mean, I think we could request that they include us, but they haven't done that in the past. We haven't requested it, I guess. We do conference calls in-state with board members. We have frequent contact with the DEA, the FDA, and the NAPP by telephone and email daily. And these meetings are really annual updates for policy development and or training.
Representative Smith?
Oh, thank you. I am finished.
Okay. Representative Hobson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I noticed some of your funding is for oversight of pharmacies and pharmacists. I noticed there was a huge increase. The number of disciplinary actions in 1998 was 46, and in 1999 it was 121. Is there a particular factor that caused that jump?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, are you looking at the graph on page 58, 59? Yes. And we've done some analysis of this, and what I think happened was with the 9901 session, we were authorized two FTEs for inspectors, and we did hire those people. Prior to that time, we were unable to get around to do annual inspections on the pharmacies. We had slipped to somewhere around once every 3 years, where we used to try and do them annually. Along that time, we sort of rationalized it by saying, well, maybe these on-site inspections aren't that important. Maybe we're not going to, you know, maybe that's not a big deal. Maybe we don't need to. So the three-year thing didn't bother anybody too much. We were just waiting to see what happened. But when we got these two new inspectors and decided, let's do them all this year, let's try and do an annual inspection again, you'll notice on page 59 the graph for warning notices. As soon as we got the pharmacists back out into the pharmacies doing the inspections, we discovered a significant noncompliance. A warning notice is a document that's issued to the pharmacy during an inspection when the inspector finds a problem. It's not a disciplinary action. It's a notice that tells the pharmacy what we think is wrong or what the, you know, suspected violation is, and they have then 30 days to evaluate it and then send us a response as to how they're going to do that. And so I think it was the fact that we got the inspectors on the road and found things. Some of them got cleaned up pretty well. And we also think then in terms of investigations, the next graph down there went from 1999, 268 down to 200. We think that because the inspectors got out there and left the warning notices and the pharmacies got cleaned up a little bit, we had fewer complaints to investigate. And we're trying to say that's what we think happened. In terms of the actual disciplinary actions, I don't know that we came up with an explanation for that. I mean, the disciplinary action is based on an evaluation by the board members and a vote of the board members. Staff will receive a complaint and do an investigation and present that investigation to the board. Then the board will deliberate and make a determination whether it's significant enough to warrant disciplinary action or not. So it depends on the mix, if they were serious complaints or if they were not serious complaints.
Certainly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And on another issue, it concerns me what appears to be a potential shortage of pharmacists, and I have two questions on that. Number one, do you have reciprocity with other states? And number two, what are any plans you might have to forestall that shortage if it is imminent?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, thank you for that question. We've spent a goodly amount of time trying to figure that out. And the board members know it, the industry, the association knows it, and there is a significant shortage. In the appendix, there is a report from the Health and Human Services, U.S. Health and Human Services. It's the eighth report down in the appendix. And President Schnabel mentioned some of the reasons for that shortage, the change in the educational requirements. And as far as what the board is doing about it, we're trying to study, we're trying to evaluate what's happening in other states and what's happening with the colleges of pharmacy. We do work with Oregon State University and the AACP, the American Association of Colleges of Pharmacy, to develop the basic curriculums for students and interns. We're looking at all of our administrative rules and statutes that relate to pharmacy practice environment and pharmacy technicians, technology, other issues that deal with what happens in a pharmacy that could be impacted by not having enough pharmacists to go around. In other words, are there other ways of providing services? We haven't got solutions yet, and we're still looking at, you know, where will the pharmacists come from? Another thing we're looking at is the question of whether is there really a shortage of pharmacists or are there too many drugs? But that's a different question to look at, I think.
Thank you.
Question, I'm looking at your budget narrative on page 113. Board inspectors are required by statute to perform periodic, routine, on-site inspections of pharmacies and other drug outlets through the state. So what does an inspection consist of? I operated a wholesale meat company for 40 years, and I can tell you what an inspection involved there, but what about a drug outlet?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure what the Agriculture Department does on an inspection, but the concept is similar. Our inspectors know the administrative rule and the statutory requirements for practice in the pharmacy for not only the professional practice of the individual, but the requirements on record keeping and distribution functions for the outlet itself, who is a registrant on the board. And so we send out annually by mail to each pharmacy a self-inspection form that allows the director of pharmacy there to go through that checklist, and it helps to educate them to what the Board of Pharmacy feels is important and allows them to discover on their own whether there are issues that they need to bring up to date. In other words, if they have to check non-compliant, then they've got the form right there. They can fix it before the inspector gets there. Then the inspector shows up sometime after that self-inspection form is completed, and then goes over it with the director of pharmacy. And we'll go around and they'll look at the record, the controlled substance records, the prescription, the various records, and the inventory requirements with that self-inspection form. It's the average inspection takes anywhere from an hour to an hour and a half, unless there are other problems to be followed up.
Are those inspections always done by a staff person, or do you have other board members do that kind of evaluation?
Mr. Chair, it's always a staff person. We don't have the board members do that at all. It's always one of our pharmacists.
Okay, that's probably the most costly, one of the most costly parts of your administrative cost, is it not? The inspections? I see you're asking for more inspectors.
Well, Mr. Chair, if I could clarify a little bit, we're not asking for more inspectors. We did last time. We think our compliance section is right where it needs to be, and we think we have enough inspectors. The FTEs we're asking for is really more in the realm of policies and rule making and systems within the pharmacy. That's where we're weak. We have administrative rules that are just hopelessly out of date that need to be brought up to speed. We have policies and systems that we need to get developed. And I listed in the appendix on page 15, projects or systems that the board and the executive director have identified as priorities. In my first year as executive director, these are the priorities that we've identified that obviously won't get done this year, but these are things that the board feels we need to initiate. So these, we're not just focusing on the compliance section and the investigations and inspections. We're looking more at actual board policies and systems.
Is there anything that needs to be done in the statutes to make it easier for you to operate and be more efficient, effective?
That's right. Mr. Chair, there actually are, I think, two bills in the legislature right now. One of the issues that sort of relates to the shortage of pharmacists is the issue of technician ratios. We have a statute that requires a specific ratio of pharmacist to technician. We're asking that be taken out of the statute and the board have authority then to deal with the stakeholders in industry to figure out a better way to do that.
I see. Senator Trope, did you have a question?
I was wondering about the shortage and wondering if it's a phenomenon in Oregon only, or is it a nationwide shortage?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trell, it's a nationwide shortage. And
bottleneck some places. I can't imagine that people aren't wanting to go into pharmacy. Are we not training enough to meet the need, or what?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trell, there are two issues that speak to that directly. One of them is that colleges of pharmacy across the nation are going and have gone for the most part to a doctor of pharmacy degree 7-year program rather than the bachelor of pharmacy degree. So that's created a temporary bottleneck. There is also the
more pharmacies.
The issue of more prescribing, more drugs being prescribed. Managed care has had influence on physician prescribing behavior, so more prescriptions are out there. Direct consumer advertising has increased the demand for prescriptions. So really two things are, and then more prescriptions are being issued, and at least temporarily
pharmacists.
Yeah, at least temporarily, fewer pharmacists are being prepared. That piece will change as the colleges catch up. But as Joe described, there are going to be a couple of years where some schools don't produce a single graduate.
Are the salaries good for pharmacists? Are they
Mr. Chair, Senator Tro, I think the salaries are good. The salaries are increasing as we speak. And I think the shortage has something to do with that. I review a couple of publications that describe salaries in different areas, and I see $10,000 sign-on bonuses with a year-long commitment to go to work somewhere. That's not bad. And then the salaries have risen.
Question, Mr. Chair? Are you finished? What kind of training does a pharmacy technician need, and how much do they make?
Mr. Chair, Senator Representative Smith, training of pharmacy technicians is really all over the board. There are a variety of community college programs. There are several certification programs. There is one national certification exam. So pharmacy technician training is a whole range. As far as what's required by statute, on-the-job training at the discretion of the pharmacist in charge is what exists.
How do you license technicians then?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, we register technicians. We don't license them, and not to get into a word game or anything, but that's an issue when we approach the legislature with what we do or how we regulate technicians. Currently, we register technicians, we accept their registration form, and we keep a list on file, and that's the extent of our... We keep a file on each person, and we receive information sometimes that goes into that file. That's it. We don't have any authority to... take disciplinary action against
them. Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Certainly.
Would it be possible, this is just a hypothetical, if in the future we could possibly beef up the licensing of our technicians to have them be required more education that could take off some of the pressure from our pharmacists? I don't know what it would be. I have no idea. You know, two-year program, a mandatory two-year college program for whatever they could do to help relieve the pharmacist of overload, it sounds like that they have.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, that's exactly one of the things the Board of Pharmacy has looked at. And in the narrative, there is some discussion of that, too, that pharmacists are part of the... Another reason for the shortage is that pharmacists are being prepared to do more direct patient contact and patient monitoring and be less focused on preparation and distribution of the product. That's where technicians... are being focused, and so the board would love to have better trained technicians and allow them to do more, to be trained to do more in the pharmacy, so that the pharmacist wouldn't be stuck to packaging functions. So
one more follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
So what is your plan to, besides talking about it, do you have a plan for something like that? I mean, it sounds to me like it's a nationwide problem.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, we did approach the legislature at 9901 session to get some training requirements and entry-level requirements and disciplinary action with in relation to technicians, and we were not able to get that through. It's not the Board of Pharmacy's bill, but there is a bill, and I don't... Do you have the number?
Senate Bill 540.
Senate Bill 540. That deals at least with the discipline of pharmacy technicians. We were hesitant to put training and entry-level requirements in that bill because that's what killed the bill last session. So we're trying to work on just the disciplinary piece at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You bet. I've asked Rick to explain your Attorney General fees request and what has been spent so far.
Mr. Chair, the governor's recommended budget for the Attorney General line item is slightly over $98,000. Now, that was based on Attorney General rates, and we know that those rates have come down based on the subcommittee's action for the department. However, looking at the board's expenditures to date through the end of December, they're at just slightly under $40,000 for the first 18 months of the current budget.
Representative Schrader?
I assume that's because we don't have the big Rite Aid issues going on we had last month.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
Basically, with the fees only being $40,000 versus $98,000 projected, I assume that's because the Rite Aid situation is now under control.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, that's part of it. What, as a result, maybe not directly as a result of that, but during that time and during the last session, because of the amount we spent on Attorney Generals, there was a we got a real clear message that we got to do whatever we can to reduce that figure. You know, we were told we're spending way too much on AG, let's do what we can. In the handout labeled Board of Pharmacy presentation on page 5, I've put together the annual fees. This isn't the biennium fee that Rick would have in his printouts. This is what we pulled out manually for from year to year. We went from 98, where it was 60,000, down to 53, down to 22 for each year. We're not positive how long we can keep it that low, or you know, we can't predict what's going to happen. Some of the AG fees are not controllable. If we get hearings, if we get a situation similar to what happened in 1998, then we're stuck with it. But we have taken numerous steps internally, primarily having board staff perform functions that we used to use the AG for. We're producing our own documents. You know, we've had to do some training and get up to speed so that our staff can do the consent orders and hearing rights and different things that are involved in disciplinary action and hearings. That's put some pressure on the staff, which is already pretty full. But we have certainly had the impact on AG fees we were trying to get, and we've got that down. But it's because staff is doing it right now, and I don't know if we can keep that at the same level. We're trying.
Representative Winters.
Thank you. I want to go back to an efficiency question with respect to the computer. Everyone in the council force said that we have all of these software, hardware, and then that our agency will be a lot more efficient, and it will also provide the service needed to our members. And yet no one has come before us yet and said if you do that, that would reduce the amount of FTEs. So my question to you is that if, you know, you have all of these bells and whistles where you can be a lot more efficient, and I notice that you have a request for an increase of 4.5 FTEs, will you come back later and say you no longer need that kind of a staffing pattern?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, hopefully someday we could come back and say that. Although, in practical terms, I don't know that we're getting 4.5 FTEs, at least compared to what we have in the office right now. On paper, looking at the CSL, which incorporates a decrease, a proposed decrease, that essential package 050 proposed reduction of two FTEs. We haven't actually implemented that. That was that package 050. So we have actually requested two additional FTEs. The 2.5, actually, the 0.5 FTE was what was approved by the previous legislative session as a contract, but was required by the statute to be an employee rather than a contracted individual. So that's already been, the dollars for that have already been approved. It's a technicality to convert that from a contract to a half of an FTE.
Which position was that follow-up?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, that's the Pharmacist Recovery Program Director. That's the one that was approved by DAS as a limited duration position, and our package requests that be made a permanent position.
So currently it is limited duration, and you're requesting that it be a permanent rather than a limited. And permanent was in statute, was it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, the statute doesn't speak to that at all. The statute says the board may employ, and it says that this individual, this director person, would be an employee of the board. The contract that was approved in the 97-99 legislative session was approved as a permanent contract, as an ongoing contract. It didn't specify any time limit.
And one of the other positions that you're requesting is to relieve some of your responsibilities. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, that's correct. It would be a person that would be involved in committees that were called to review and rewrite the administrative rules and develop policies. They would work under my direction.
So you're looking for technician type?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, I was hoping for a little higher position than a technician. And again, in the appendix that I just handed out, there is a comment from Human Resources and a position description and position qualifications for the position that I'm asking for. And I think it fit the level of executive assistant or something like that. It's on page... Oh, it's not a page number, but it's in the appendix, and it looks like it's... It's about 5 pages deep into the appendix. Position description for assistant administrator. And general description classification for executive assistant.
Perhaps Rick or... Colleen can help me on the last paragraph where it says a concern about the position, and it is possible that duties are being removed, change in the executive director's position. The position is a benchmark position, and if this is so, it will need to be A, reevaluated. Can you please explain to me what A, reevaluation is?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, I'm not sure where that concern came from, and I didn't speak directly with this individual. This was a report that came back after we submitted our proposed position description. Nothing that we presented indicated that my position would change at all.
I think it was directed to Ms. Kinney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, I don't have the exact description of what the Hay evaluation is. I can get that and bring it to you tomorrow.
Since your Human Services raised that concern, it would be well if we knew what it was.
I agree.
Thank you.
Good. Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Trow.
I hope that it works out that the person who is to be hired is somebody who is very good at doing administrative rules. Otherwise, your attorney general fees are going to go up significantly because it takes a lot of good advice to do that. And as I recall, this board had some real problems the last time it did that. I was here and remembered how vague and difficult it was to understand some of those administrative rules.
Okay. Other questions or comments? Representative Schrader.
I assume we've heard, if I'm going to ask a question of you, I assume we've kind of heard the presentation, so to speak.
Yes, we have.
Okay. And I had a question, kind of following up on what Representative Winters is saying with the computer upgrade. I look at also on your performance outputs that you've got, and you say currently you turn around the license in 7 days. That's excellent. I mean, that's exceptional in my opinion. I guess I'm curious how much the computer, $270,000 in computers, is going to help you improve that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, the license for pharmacists have a number of requirements that are really outside of the 7-day issue. This 7 days is from the time that the application gets to our office and is put out. The applicant has to go through, besides going through our board, They make the first request to us, then they go through the National Association of Boards of Pharmacy, and it's the National Association that does a background check with all the other states and prepares for the national examination and does some things. So there's a time lag through that process, and I'm not sure exactly what that is. I could find that out. But after that's completed, then the applicant comes back to the Board of Pharmacy and actually submits that application. So that's the figure that we're looking at there. I think the overall time is more than that. We're looking at the part that our office staff has control over.
Well,
continue.
I don't see how the computer system is going to get you a whole lot better there unless you don't need. I finally go again on Representative Winters. It's a fairly elaborate computer system, and I understand you need to talk to the other agencies. Hopefully this will match up with what DHS is currently thinking, and hopefully you've had that conversation with them. But it would seem if you're going to put the computer system in place, then you certainly would need some of the FTE or could rearrange some of the FTE to do some of what's in the other packages. I would assume that's the plan.
Yeah, Mr. Sheriff, Senator, if we could do that, we certainly would. We are, though, currently processing in excess of 14,000 licenses a year with two FTEs, which is significantly less than you'll see in most agencies, and doing that with a computer that won't run on Windows. So there's some efficiencies in there that we and those particular staff have been able to develop. I'm not sure what kind of magic they work sometimes to do that, but they work real hard at it. And the new computer and most of the expense is not only for that licensing program. It will certainly do that. But more than that, it would create a central database that would allow the licensing information and our compliance information to merge and do things electronically that we have to do now by hand.
Yes. This kind of gets to the heart of my concern with technology and state government. I mean, it sounds very good, and certainly being able to interface, what's the words we use, interface and, you know, coordinate and,
network.
You know, get up next newest best thing. But the reality is you're doing a great job already. So if I was, you know, a business person, I'd be thinking, oh, geez, you know, why spend $300,000 on something when you're actually doing an extraordinary job, and I agree. I mean, I'm just impressed as heck that you're doing as good a job as you are with such few people. I mean, I'm really impressed, and that's good. But then it creates the question, well, just because the newest computer system's out there, you know, I'm having trouble, I guess is what I'm telling you. You know, without seeing some corresponding decrease someplace else, I'm having trouble getting to why this is really necessary.
Yeah.
That's just an issue.
May I, Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, I appreciate that, and we have thought about that and talked about that a lot at the board. Besides that, the old software and some of the hardware, we don't need to replace all the hardware. It's primarily software and system stuff, but the licensing hardware and the systems in there are stressed and close to collapse, even though we're doing well. And, you know, we're wondering what day we're going to walk in there and have to be doing everything manually all of a sudden. It's really that fragile, and we're not, at least we don't believe we're talking about bells and whistles. We're talking about driving a bus with flat tires and no gas. At some point, we're going to have to get out and change the tires and fill the tank.
Yeah, Senator Schroeder, and we'll get back to Representative Schroeder.
I sort of wanted to change the subject a little bit. I'm wondering about the training of new pharmacists, especially I noticed that the governor's budget has some rather significant reductions for the School of Pharmacy, and I understand that's basically in certain kinds of student support. Do you understand that, and do you want to comment on it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, on the part about student involvement, I'm not sure what you mean. I do know that there's a significant stress on the College of Pharmacy because of the budget, and they certainly have the option of raising the tuition, and I guess that's been the only alternative available to them at this point. But it's something that we haven't really been able to do much about, at least at the board. It's a fairly recent development, and although we work with the College of Pharmacy and their curriculum, we understand it's a pressure.
Of keeping the tuition down, that that has gone away or something, because I think there probably will be a greater cost to students for that program.
Mr. Chair, Senator Trillin, we haven't seen documentation that has had an impact on enrollment or whether that's causing a decrease. We haven't seen that yet, but if it exists.
It's pretty early for there to be any impact to that.
This is really the first semester that's going to have an effect. So.
Okay. Representative Williams?
Yes, I want to go to performance measures and you know, where you have outcome measures. And we're all have this session are looking to agencies to provide us with your goals, and so that for next session we can be having that there is some indication of what you're doing. And for me, I would like if you would give this body some what your goals are, not just the outcome measures, because you know what you're saying is how many days it takes to wear, but I don't know where it is you want to go. And it would be very helpful for us to know where you want to go, you know, with the board. And I think that would also help when you talk about your need for central computer system, you know, some of those things. And so if I could have those, I would appreciate it. I think it's commendable that you're projecting that you'll have contested case hearings. You had one, you'll only have another one, and that's fine, you know. But I think, where do you want to get to? In Oregon, do you want that we have no complaints among our pharmacists? So give me some concepts as to where you would like this board to go. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Winters. I wish I had a list of those I could just hand to you, too. And in some ways, this is why we're here asking you for an increase. You know, this board has not had systems in place in the past, even other than our strategic planning efforts and the strategic plan that President Schnabel went over with you, in terms of staff sitting down and developing those measures and goals. When I accepted the position of executive director a year and a half ago, I stepped into essentially a void in some areas, and so I'm in the process of developing that right now. And in the next to the last, or third, anyway, the last three pages or so of this appendix are issues and priorities identified by the board and staff that require the development of some of those kind of outcomes measures. That's what we're trying to do now, and that's one of the reasons we're asking for another staff person. We're just, you know, our staff has not essentially had the resources to do that. The administrative staff have more operations functions and requirements than really allows them to spend doing some of those management kind of things need to be done, which is why we're asking for the FTE.
I'm asking for something a little more simplistic than that. That doesn't really, and maybe your board in its discussion may talk about what they would like to see occur in the future for Oregon, that you want to see less complaints, or you want to make sure that Oregon and the pharmacists are complaint-free, or you want to make sure that we have adequate pharmacists. I mean, to me, that is the framework with which your outcomes come. You know, you've given us the outcomes that says how many complaints that you generate and how quickly you are able to resolve applications and making sure they get to the process. But the broader, you know, to me, that is, what do you want to do with it?
Mr. Chair, if I might.
Certainly.
Representative Winters. The Board of Pharmacy would like to see that there are no dispensing errors by pharmacists. That's our goal. Our goal is no errors, ever. If we have no errors, we have no complaints from the public. We'd like to have the board staff able to quickly and efficiently answer questions from the media, from the licensees, and from the public, quickly and efficiently. We'd like to see all prescriptions transmitted to pharmacies, either on a prescription pad or electronically, however that may occur in the future, to be completely error-free, completely without problem. That currently does not happen. Pharmacists spend a great deal of time resolving prescribing issues with physicians and nurse practitioners and dentists. We would also like to see patients respond adequately to their prescription medications and get well and move on and ultimately not be on prescription medications. I think that would be one of the goals we would certainly like to see. So, we really, it's a complicated system of pharmaceutical care that pharmacists are involved with. It's not just the pharmacist. It involves the physician and the patient and a number of systems in between. So, you know, our goal is always no error and no complaints and efficient regulation such that we're not bound by unnecessary and time-consuming rules.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. Representative Schrader.
Again, following up on Representative Winter's comments, I think what we've got on the page here are, as she pointed out, outputs, things that you do. And what you'd want to do, I feel, it would be on your dispensing errors reported, you know, your goal is to show how something in the policy packages gets you here. If we give you $200,000 or okay for you to spend $200,000 is the way it works, and you will say that, gosh, by next plan, we think it's realistic to get this number down to another number. And if I was looking at this, I'd say you're going to go from 70 cases down to 49 cases. And that's why I'd read that. So when I look at this budget, or when someone else looks at this budget next session, you know, and you've made no change, and I say, oh, geez, you know, maybe we didn't do it right. What are you going to do differently? And we'd back some things out of the budget or do something in a different manner. So I think that's kind of where Representative Winters is going, and I guess where we are going, too. I'd urge you just to pick out a couple of things, two, maybe three things you can affect, some outcomes like that that you can affect. Maybe a customer, you alluded to customer satisfaction, and that would be your complaints go down overall. And I think I'd put that on here just as a suggestion to you. One of the outputs I don't see, I looked initially, geez, you only have a couple of violations, a couple of contested case hearings, but then on page 59, you know, obviously your complaints have gone up pretty dramatically as people become more aware, I think it's more complicated. So maybe another performance outcome, you know, would be that people are more satisfied. And the way you measure that is your complaints go down from X to this number. And then that would be, I think, helpful information. So for me to feel comfortable with any of these packages, I would have to be able to see some numbers and how you plan to attack that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, I think that's the goal of having the information systems that would allow us to kind of crunch that data. Right now, it's all manual and has to be pulled by hand to get those performance measures. That is the goal, is to be able to measure those sorts of things.
My point is you already have the data. The computer won't give you the data. You already have the data. The data will, it'll help you crunch the data faster, maybe in a, you know, variety of different permutations that you can't do right now. So it won't give you any more data. You have the data. I think all you need to do is tell me that, you know, this is going to get you down there quicker, better, or harder than what you've got right here.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, if I could just add to that, too, and I'm glad that the example you picked is that one, because that is one, and I did this manually myself a week or so ago, and the data is there, but we have to go through investigative files one at a time and pull out information. But in terms of that example you used, the dispensing errors reported is related to action that we have taken that we're trying to develop, and specifically what President Schnabel referred to as the accuracy label rule, or the rule that the board adopted to require identification on the outside of the package what the pills inside are supposed to look like. Then we're expecting that fewer errors are going to occur, going to get fewer reports. We're measuring the effectiveness of that action that the board took, and I guess I wanted to say that in the hope that that's the message you're trying to get to us, that we're doing things like that and measuring the impact of things like that we've done. That's why I look at going from 70 to 49. I think we can make a 30% increase in 1 year or one biennium and continue on from 30 down to zero. And I think the biggest step that we've done in terms of that is that changing that rule requirement.
Another question, follow-up?
Yes. One more comment and then a question. Be careful with the targets up above where you're going from, you know, 6 days to 7 days turn. I kind of want to do it better, not a little bit worse. That's probably not statistically significant, but it does get one a little concerned when one's approving more money for different packages. The other question I have, and not to be difficult, but the agency policy and research, I guess the question I'd ask is, I belong to an associate professional association also, and the board doesn't really get into, the board for my association doesn't really get into that. They're mostly disciplinary, license renewals, you know, just, you know, make sure it's safe for people out there to go to the particular profession and feel good about it, kind of things we've been discussing. And then the association, we also have an association just like the pharmacists do. Their role is usually to think about the policy issues and how can we, you know, do things different and get into that legislation if that's where you need to go. That's usually their function, not the board's function. Could you comment on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, yes, and that's, in fact, one of the points that I'd like to drive home a little better than we have in the past to this committee, and that is the difference between the Board of Pharmacy and some of the other regulatory boards. The Board of Pharmacy is the only board that regulates the distribution of the product or the drugs. All the other boards regulate the professional practice, like your board, like the social workers, the medical board, the nursing board. They all regulate the professional practice of those individuals. We, on the other hand, regulate the professional practice of pharmacists and the manufacture and distribution of drugs throughout the state, and that puts us in a position with the corporations, the manufacturers, the distributors, the drugstores, the hospitals, and so we get drawn right into the middle of policy issues, and there's not as well-defined line sometimes between the association and the board. I mean, we recognize there are those differences, and we should do what we can to have the association do their appropriate functions and have the board stick to our statutory requirements and our appropriate functions in the attempt to do that. But I think the difference is the fact that our board regulates the distribution of the drugs and puts the board in a different position.
Certainly. How is what your board does different than the veterinary community, which also distributes a lot of drugs and directly dispense drugs on a regular basis and deal with manufacturers and that sort of thing? So how is the pharmacist different than a veterinarian?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, I'm not sure that your board has authority to deal with the manufacture and distribution of drugs. And I could be wrong, but we have the statutory requirement to regulate the manufacture and distribution as well as a professional practice. Your board, like you said earlier, is concerned with the professional practice and entry-level competency and things like that. I'm not aware that your board gets into distribution functions unless there is a disciplinary issue with an individual veterinarian. And if I'm wrong, I plead ignorance, but that's been my understanding with the other professional boards.
Further questions? I don't want you to think that we're picking on you, you know, but the governor's budget is a $12 billion budget, and we're talking about $10,000-$15,000 items here, but it's an important policy. I'm really concerned, as you've heard expressed by other members, Mike Greenfield was in the other day, 47,000 public employees. We spend $1 million a day interfacing and with the information, all that. And as Representative Patridge said, we've invested $13 million, I don't know what over a period of time that is, in trying to discover new ways to take advantage of the technology in this information age. So we do, we'll continue to, you know, ask you kinds of questions that you're going to have to justify that this is a legitimate request, even though it's your money that, or that your members' money that we're spending. But we view that as the what we must do in this board. And Representative Winters, as chairman of the sub on the human services, the same thing, because I tell you, it really is kind of overwhelming, this information age. Seems to me we have so much more information than we're using or can take advantage of. It's costly to get there, but anyway, that's where we're heading. Any other questions?
I wanted to just to add on to your comment, and she said even though it's their dollars, and but ultimately it's still taxpayers' dollars, because the dollars get passed on to the consumer. And so, you know, the standard is that we're treating the boards with other funds the same as we are if they were general fund dollars. And so we're not picking on anybody. We're kind of doing what the taxpayers tend to do.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, I appreciate you telling us that, and we recognize that, and we understand that it's somebody pays the bill. We know that. And even though it doesn't have to balance with the general funds or with something else in the governor's budget, we understand the process, and that's why you're going through that. And appreciate that you're not picking on us. I've had a lot of advice in the last 4 weeks from people that went through this, and I think I've heard probably every comment that you've made or everything that, gee, I should be careful of and don't say this, and so it's not going to surprise me. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Other questions or comments? Let's see, Rick, we are scheduled to have another public hearing tomorrow, and it seems to me everyone has said what they want to say. Can we just go to work session on Wednesday, not tomorrow? What's that do to us?
Mr. Chair, yes. We can't go to work session tomorrow because we haven't posted notice.
I know.
And so unless there's other questions or other need to come back, there is.
What I'd like to do then is if you would deliver the information to Rick as soon as possible. We'll use that in our work session. Seems to me it was on the scheduling of fees comparative.
Fees of other states, yes.
What do we want from you?
From the Department of Administrative Services, the Human Services, the Hay evaluation.
Oh, okay.
For the package 233,
okay.
I believe.
Okay. And if that's okay with the members, we will not meet tomorrow. I'm sorry, but we cannot meet tomorrow. Is there any other business to come before this committee? If not, we are adjourned.